Hey Dmitro, how are you doing?
Hi Adam, awesome. Thanks a lot. How are you?
Yeah, even better than you. Lots of interesting Java projects and Java 21 and even later everywhere. So I really enjoyed the time. And you?
Yeah, there has been a lot of stuff going on in LLM space and in Java as well. Yeah, lots of new features, lots of new stuff to add. So I'm happy to discuss it today.
What happens to you? I think you are working for Red Hat right now. Is it true?
Yeah, true. Since the beginning of this year.
So you had big dreams last time, you know, startups and yachts and, you know, and large houses in Hollywood. And now you are working for Red Hat, right?
Yeah, true.
this was supposed to be a joke. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy to work at Red Hat. I can't complain. It's really been very nice.
No, what I have to say, all people I know from Red Hat are nice. No kidding. So this actually, I had lots of interviews here at podcasts, and I know them a longer time. And it's just like a really interesting bunch of people. Reminds me really old Sun Microsystems days. I don't know whether you remember the company, but this is like, you know, the continuation a bit of mm-hmm. of the old idea. How it happened? So how you got the idea to join Red Hat and why you joined or how it happens? Interesting.
Well, so it's happened basically during previous DevOps in Belgium, mm-hmm. 2023. And I got contacted by Dimitris Andreadis, and it went from there. So they were very interested into integrating it in Quarkus, having better integration, and they were also interested in supporting this open source project. So it worked really well. So in the interest of both parties.
This is interesting because I'm using Quarkus all the time. So no kidding. So even recently, I have a blog and there were some caused problems by myself. But the blog was run on an old Apache Roller server. And old in means it was from 2006 and maybe a little bit newer with no old Jasper engine. So it was really ancient. And it ran on Docker, also with Hypersonic database. And what I did during the pandemic times, I created an workshop about MicroProfile. I got the idea to write a block engine and with MicroProfile. And recently, I migrated completely to Quarkus and using, you know, the stuff from the training. And it was actually, I think on a weekend, I migrated everything. It was a highly productive experience. So now my blog is a 100% Quarkus MicroProfile application without any external dependencies. And even cooler, I replaced the Hypersonic database with file storage. So now all the posts are stored locally and very good to backup. And this is my leisure. And in my work is Quarkus all the time. So I'm happy that you're also using Quarkus right now. And you, I hope you also enjoy the experience, right? So is this...
Yeah. Of course. I mean, I am not really contributing a lot to the Quarkus side of things. So it's mostly Georgios and some other people are working on it. But I've tried Quarkus multiple times recently, and it's really was great. So very very nice developer experience.
Yeah. How to start our conversation, or how to reboot our conversation? So lots of interesting stuff happening in LLM and Java space. So let's start with Java. So what do you mean by interesting?
The latest releases. It's not actually from the last time, but basically virtual threads. Mm-hmm. And I finally got a bit of time to play with it. And
how they help LangChain? Is there any impact on LangChain virtual threads?
Not really, but for example, if we're talking about vector APIs, for example, mm-hmm. there's been a latest contribution to LangChain, which is JLlama in inference engine written completely in Java 21 with vector APIs. And yeah, I think it's very cool. It's really very nice. And pretty advanced as well. So it supports all the local LMs like Llama, Mistral, whatever, even function calling. So it's really
was contributed by Alfonso, right?
No, not really. I think it's a different person. There's actually been two projects to make inference in Java, and this one is called J Llama.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So it was by Jake from
yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. So that is interesting because Jake is from Cassandra space, you know, and the Alfonso is from GraalVM, and both are working similar stuff. So this is really because interesting because this opens the doors to pure Java inference, and from my perspective, this is very important and for enterprise projects. I mean, very important, you know. For instance, I'm in a project where we have lots of pipelines and stages. And if you have a pure Java environment, it is really easy to manage the dependencies, the pipelines, and so forth. But if you start, you know, with Python and whatever, which is not our realm, it gets very quickly very complicated and also very slow. Because in upfront, you have to, you know, to create the entire environment and you're actually losing time and so productivity, right?
Yeah, and I hope that Llama2J will also be integrated soon. Mm-hmm. So it's always great to have more and more options available.
So the most important stuff is the vector API, right? Because the vector API in Java allows the direct integration of external models and fast calculation on CPU, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe perhaps this can be also integrated into the latest this vector API into this in-process embeddings which we already have, but we don't really utilize vector API there. It's already pretty fast, but still a way to go. So yeah, looking forward to that. And actually, there's been a lot of releases since we talked last time, like six or seven versions. And as usual, a lot of new contributions of new language models, vector stores, and also what I really like, what changed quite a lot is that a lot more language model providers now support tools. So it's like 12 or 13 out of 20, I would say. So it's like they all seem to converge on similar functionality. So now it's much more easier to, you know, swap one model provider with another one and still have the same functionality.
So for the listeners, tools is a strange name for external plugins, if you will. So, right? So what the LLMs can do, they can give us all the data with that, or all the parameters, let's say, or arguments. And with this arguments, we call our own microservice with capabilities and return the response back to the LLM. So we LLM could ask us about the weather or house temperature, something which LLM cannot just know. And this is where this is like the interface to the real world, almost, right? Between LLM,
Yeah, exactly. It gives you option to execute whatever. So language model can trigger whatever action. And the nice thing is that it does it in a very structured way. So it returns a JSON, which you can reliably parse. And recently, also one of the latest features which I really like is structured outputs from OpenAI. Mm-hmm. It's been already implemented in Google Gemini, but now it's also supported by OpenAI, which is kind of a 100% guarantee of the schema adherence. Mm-hmm. So basically, you provide the schema that you how you want the response to look like, JSON schema, and then model provider will guarantee you that the produced JSON is fully compatible with the schema. which is really, really nice. So you don't, because previously models were able to generate JSON, but it wasn't, there was no guarantee that it will adhere to schema. So there were a lot of cases where model could forget about some fields or invent some new fields. So it was not very reliable.
But what I used a lot is the Anthropic Claude. And I also teached or you know, my prompts require a JSON output because I like to parse it. And I was surprised it was 100% reliable right now. So I created hundreds of different prompts and used it in different ways. And it always responded correctly. So, but my response was a simple one. So I guess if you start, you know, to retrieve a more complex objects, then it will break. But in my case, it was just a very simple, like maybe 3 slots response. And this worked exceptionally well with various Claude. I started thinking of this Claude 2 and now with 3.5. And yeah, it works exceptionally well, I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's what actually they recommend usually, to have a flat structure of the fields you want to get. So if it's very nested and deep, it might have some troubles. But seems like now with the structured outputs, it's works pretty well, even with a very deep and the structure can even be recursive. So it's very awesome.
Okay, this is what, of course, you I think. Without proper support, you will be crazy in the prompts. I will have to provide examples, you know, something, several examples to and it saves time for sure. So now you mentioned there are several releases since last time we spoke. So what were the killer features between back then and now?
I'm not sure what exactly to call the killer features.
Or more interesting, useful, or features you like, whatever is interesting, no?
Mm-hmm.
Not beyond reformatting JavaDoc, you know? Not to say, okay, I...
Yeah, sure. yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of improvements in the RAG area. So one of the interesting features which people might like is what's called Easy RAG.
Mm-hmm.
Since we heard a lot of complaints from people that RAG is complicated, it's hard to set up and you need to choose embedding models, you need to deal with chunking, and so we sort of decided that we should provide something out of the box, completely very simple and easy to install. And so this feature, basically you add a dependency to your Maven dependency, which imports all the necessary stuff, which is embedding model and chunkers and embedding store, whatever, and you just provide the path to your documents where they are stored locally, for example, on your PC to the folder where they are, and that's it. So and everything is happening automatically. All the documents are imported, chunked, embedded, stored, and it's ready to use. And everything is happening also locally.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is one of the things that improves the experience. Then of course we had a lot of new vector store integrations.
And wait a second. What it is, it is more like a pre-configured profile.
Yeah.
Right. So with so conventional configuration. So you say I would like to have rack, and you find out what is the best combination. So you know all the parameters. What's inside Easy RAG? So which products or which implementations are you using inside?
So it has some defaults, like common sense defaults, which you still can customize, but you don't have to know about that and care about that. So we use one of the in-process embedding models, which is quite nice. I mean, size performance ratio, and yeah, just chunk in 300 tokens. I think it's generally advisable to start from this range of chunk size. And
what is the embedding model you're using? What's the name of the model?
I think it's BG small. I don't actually remember, but at the time when we released, I just took the best one from Hugging Face leaderboard, which was still like pretty reasonable size. And and so you don't have to worry about anything. You just plug it in and you have a rack for your application. And okay, so then one of the more interesting features, which is still kind of experimental, I'm not sure a lot of people would use it in production, but still, is SQL database retrieval. Out of the box. So yeah, if you have a SQL database, you can just provide a data source to us, and basically what we will do is we'll get the schema out of the database, provide it to the language model, and it will be able to create SQL queries, which we then parse, validate, and execute, and provide the information back to the model. So now, additionally to vector stores, as a data source for reg, you can also have SQL database if you have some data there, like some statistical data. Maybe user wants to ask queries like, I don't know, how many sales did we have? What is our products, the most selling products and stuff like that, which is really nice because a lot of model providers, they really fine-tuned pretty well on generating valid SQL queries adhering to the schema.
Let's go beyond that. So you are actually using AI-generated SQL queries.
Yeah, exactly. So LLM can see the question from the user, can see the schema, and can infer, okay, which query should actually be generated in order to get the data that
user... Yeah, this is huge. What I thought is the retrieval, I thought for reg, right? So you can plug a SQL database and it will ask, you know, the SQL database and get text from the database. Like, okay, this is useful, but not that interesting. But what you're saying right now is pretty cool because LLMs can generate, you know, the schema is almost like a tool, a kind of, right? And are able on the fly generate the SQL to retrieve the data and give it back to you. So, And if you do it correctly, actually, what you could do, you can embed the SQL, which was generated, to the response. So the user would be able to know to validate whether the SQL is reasonable or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this kind of stuff is also what we've added is more.
How you call it? SQL retrieval?
Yeah, it's SQL database content retriever. It's marked as experimental because
we have to rename it because it sounds to me like the possibility to have another JDBC. You know. As if you tell me this, then SQL retrieval is okay. I mean, if you have a SQL, it can retrieve. But it is like the point is that LLM generates the SQL, you know?
I mean, we were named like the source from where it comes. So it comes from SQL database, which holds, in this case, structured data, not unstructured as vector databases usually do. Good point.
Generative SQL.
Yeah, could be like that.
GSQL.
And this is one
type. Wait a second, I'm interested in it. So what it means is actually that you there is a prompt which is prepared by you, and this prompt is used to generate the SQL, and the model has to support it. This is what happens behind the scenes, right? So it's like prepared user and system prompt. Which asks to generate the SQL, and the parameter to the prompt is the JDBC schema. What you did, maybe you used JDBC metadata, converted to a JSON, and passed it to the prompt, right?
Yes. So it's it can be configured, but basically what you need to do is just a data source. If I have as a data source, I can parse the metadata and create the schema. It's not a JSON schema. It's just DDL statements like create table, whatever. Because that's how language models are fine-tuned on this type of task. Like they're given the schema, the question in natural language, and they are expected to produce a valid SQL. This can be also overridden for sure if you don't want to provide all the information or want to customize something. And yeah, then this prompt is fed to the LLM and it basically produces SQL, which we then kind of parse, because also not every model can provide fully valid and, you know, they mm-hmm. like to talk a lot and provide a lot of additional text to it, stuff like that. So there is also...
Glad you ask, you know, today this is the best model I can give you.
Yeah, sure. And also make sure that this statement is actually a select statement and not something like job, database, whatever. And then it's automatically executed behind the scenes and the result is sent back to the LM. So it can then provide a natural language response, because the result from the query is also usually like table of some stuff, right?
Ah. So what happens is not like you get, you know, the response as JSON. It's more like it gets to the translated to a human text, basically, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What I thought is you get, you know, the JSON and you can use it in your app. It's also possible, you know, that you say you use structured output and then, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This can also be done like that. So it's mm-hmm. not limited to. I mean, it can be used either as a retriever in RAG pipeline. Mm-hmm. So it's getting executed every time, let's say, when the query comes. And if this is a type of the application, like question and answering application, which should have access to this stuff, you can plug it in as a RAG. Source, or it can be also used as a tool, mm-hmm. Which LM can call on demand, and so there is a lot of flexibility there. So this is one type of the data source which you can plug into the RAG. Mm-hmm. Additionally, too, so we have vector databases, SQL databases. Now the new addition is web search engines.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. As we know, language models, they don't have access to up-to-date information.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty handy. You can plug in Google Search or SERP API or Tavily. So there is a lot of search providers there. Mm-hmm. So currently, three are supported out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also plug it in, and it will automatically do the web search for you. And add this information to the prompt, so the LM will be able to answer based on that fresh information as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be useful for some use cases. Then yet another type is graph database. So we had an integration with Neo4j graph mm-hmm. database. And now there is also this content retriever, Neo4j content retriever, which is also kind of similar to SQL database in that regard that LLM has a schema of the database and it can then generate cipher queries, which is then automatically executed against this Neo4j database, and you can retrieve data from there. So mm-hmm. it's quite a hot topic recently. Graph RAG. So
yep.
That's what you can do with it is you can plug in graph database.
It's one of the hottest topics. Also, Microsoft is now pushes like crazy this area. What I did quick research. So you know the DuckDuckGo search engine. They also have a search API, result API,
mm-hmm.
and Perplexity also has an API. But they are this would be interesting having both, you know, to access. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo, yeah, noting.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo is everybody's darling, so it will be interesting.
They can be easily added, so the API is such that you can plug in
mm-hmm.
pretty much every web search engine mm-hmm. and get your data. So yeah, now as you can see, for RAG, it becomes like more... Right, you can have many more different data sources to get data from to feed the model.
One question regarding RAG. So the context window getting large and larger. So it means RAG could become less and less relevant, right? So because what we could do, if you get a huge context windows, you can plug, you know, all the information to the prompt and just ask it. So it becomes maybe more expensive, I guess. So the question is, doesn't have to even, right? So so what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, that's a pretty was a pretty hot topic a while back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the my feeling is that yes, the need for RAG is less,
mm-hmm.
But still, usually knowledge bases are pretty huge.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that every knowledge base can fit into the prompt.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you pay per token.
Mm-hmm.
So the more information you give in the prompt, the more you pay, which is not optimal. And also, there has been also reports that the more information, especially if it's unrelevant, it may degrade the performance of of the answer.
Yeah.
LLM is just lost with so much information.
Yeah. I have similar opinion. So I go even further. If you use REC, it is like, you know, in the middle is the LLM. And around the LLM, almost like a hexagonal architecture, we have our data sources. And this is, and the data sources is what we control, you know, and this is easier to debug because we see, okay, we pass node this information to LLM, and this is more like microservice architecture, so lots of data sources. Yeah, I call it data source, not JDBC data sources, they're more generic data sources. And LLM gets, you know, everything from the outside, so it's easier to build. You can even... you know, you have multiple teams. Every team, you know, like always, microservice architecture is in charge of a single data source, and then at the end, the LLM comes. So I think it's also about structure. So REC is a nice way to make the entire AI application to create it in more structured and simpler way, right?
Yeah, a very good point about debugability. Because yeah, if you feed the LLM with all your knowledge, then how do you know what exactly knowledge was used to answer this query? So it's becoming very hard to debug it. And yeah, so the I'm sure RAG will stay, but now with bigger context windows and cheaper tokens, what becomes possible is providing reasonable amount of information to the LLM, right? Now you might want to include a little bit more, not just the chunk, which was like the best match, but maybe the whole document, which contains this chunk, to provide more more context to the LLM. Mm-hmm. Like not everything, still very relevant information, but surrounded by relevant context, which was always a struggle, and people had to invent a lot of different retrieval strategies, like parent document retrieval or like window retrieval, where you additionally to the chunk you also get like a previous chunk and the next chunk, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now it can be simplified a lot because you have basically more space to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure RAG will stay at least for the foreseeable future. And yeah, it just makes our life much easier, this longer context windows.
Mm-hmm. So we had EasyRec, we had the GSQL generative SQL feature. Now you integrated the graph databases and Neo4j, I guess, right?
Yeah, Neo4j.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And what's the deal with that? So, I mean, because what's interesting, do you remember RDF? Resource Description Framework. What Resource Description Framework, RDF, is W3C standard, and this was the attempt in 2003 to classify knowledge in the web. And the idea, RSS was actually, the idea was, there's not only really, really simple syndication. At the beginning, there was also RDF syndication. So the idea was, you know, to capture the graph between concepts in RDF, so you can reason about that. So this was like the first attempt, maybe a little bit to AI, but a very strict and way. And if you think about this is the graph, right? This is the knowledge graph. This RDF was like the knowledge graph. And I think back then there was even Sparkle language, which is used in one of the databases now as well. But And Neo4j is something like this without RDF. So you have links between entities, and the links is where this is most important thing, the relations, and you can put attributes and the relations. So how you use then Neo4j? So and I know what's the benefit from LangChain point of view?
The benefit is that if you have your data in this vector database as a source of information, then you can also use it in RAG. So you can also provide this relationships to the model, like, I don't know, some facts, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just another type of... Because as data comes in different formats, right? It can be structured, unstructured. It can be like a structured like a graph. So it just gives more options to the user.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been also some reports that this graph RAG improves the performance of RAG quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It will require you to, if you don't have a graph database, first it will require you to process all your data you have and structure it in a graph way, which will probably also be done with the help of LLMs, which might get costly, but still, so yet another data source for the RAG.
Microsoft, I forgot the name, this is what I search now, they call it Graph RAG. And what they do with it, they use like a modular way to, this is on the GitHub project, I will give you in the chat. And they collaborated with Neo4j with that, and they were able to achieve better prompting results with that. So this is what I thought you are also doing. But what you are doing is just basically using Graph Neo4j as for RAG, right? As a data source.
Yeah. So the model can produce a Cypher query similar to what's done with SQL database and retrieve data using this query.
Mm-hmm. And what Microsoft attempted to do is they say that they use the repository presents a methodology for using knowledge graph memory structure to enhance LLM outputs. So the idea is because, you know, they structured the entire knowledge in a graph. They have the relations between the entities. They can build easier prompts and integrate it better. So this is their idea, GraphRAG. They not use the Neo4j as a pure data source. They use it to structure the prompts or LLMs. So this is the hot topic. But there's nothing to do with Neo4j. Say LangChain 4j. We could use it as well. This is why it is hot. Because Neo4j and Microsoft cooperate there.
Yeah, they have. I mean, this term GraphRAG, I think it has a lot of. It's very broad. Has a lot of flavors, and so basically, you can implement the same using LangChain 4j.
Yeah,
that's just another way to do that.
So,
yeah,
I interrupted you millions of times.
No, that's fine. So that's for RAG. Yet another feature which is also quite handy is metadata filtering.
Mm-hmm.
It's like usually your data has some metadata, like a document has an author, I don't know, some maybe ID or whatever, a date when it was modified or created, whatever. And this metadata, it's also stored in the vector store, and many vector stores support this feature called metadata filtering. It's when you do the similarity search in this database, you restrict it to some filter condition. You say, okay, do the similarity search, but only do it for the documents which match this specific filter.
Mm-hmm.
And the filter can be arbitrary, so it can be simple, complicated, like and or have this all conditions. And this helps a lot during crack if you want to narrow down the search space. So if you have a lot of data and you, for example, these documents can belong to different users, let's say, and current user wants to search only his own documents, let's say. This can be done this way easily. This can be even like extended in a way that language model can generate the filter expression before the search is done. So user asks a question, model knows about the metadata, how it's like which fields are there. Like, let's say language model knows that each document has an author associated and the date, and then user asks like what's been like recent document which some user created or updated, and then language model can generate the filter which will be applied during search and retrieved.
You could even use the GSQL feature, right? Generative SQL feature for that.
Yeah, it actually works pretty similar. So the model can generate a SQL query, which is then transformed into the into the filtering expression, which is not SQL because it's vector databases, right? And yeah, then this filter is applied. So yeah, actually, it works out of the box this way. So the LLM thinks that this is actually an SQL table, and it tries to query it and create a very expression for this table.
Yeah, and a summary, what it just means is that you are passing information down to the REC engine or the data sources, and the data sources are pre-filtering the data and return data back to the LLM, which meets specific criteria, which is metadata, author date, or whatever you like. So it's more like, you know, I forgot what was the name in Hibernate. So you could have, I think, even filters. So you could have, you know, afterwards you can apply filters to the query, multi-tenancy, and so I think it was also called filters. So you can say, okay, this is my SQL statement. But actually, I would like the results to have only for this tenant ID, right? So this is what similar here. We say, okay, give us the information, but only for the author, whatever. And this is like additional filter. And on that note, I think in one point of time, it's also an enterprise feature, would be something like guardrails, right? So we can say return only like a firewall for LLMs. So if LLM goes crazy, it's not returned to the user. So you can have afterthought filtering, you know. So whatever is returned back, we say, okay, but this must not contain, I don't know, profanity or, I don't know, aggressive words or whatever. So we have like additional filtering afterwards. And what's also, I think, is important is having something like API gateway almost, where we say, I would like to perform this task. Give me the cheapest model or whatever. No, that we have a meta. The models, they are. What you did with EasyREC, maybe you say, okay, this is the best model for the task, and this could be dynamic. Then you can say, okay, for this task, I will pick this model because it's cheaper than the other one. It will also come in one point of time, I'm pretty sure, because costs are everything. So not if it's an embedded model, rather than if you are talking, you know, to the external models. And even if you pick Claude, they are different models with different power and prices. And they are not always available. This is the next thing. Yeah, maybe you will call a model and you get throttled. So you will have to call another one. So this is also a very common enterprise use case.
Yeah, I think Quarkus integration has a lot of these features.
Exactly. Fault tolerance, interestingly, right? So yeah. All the micro profile stuff.
Yeah, and it works pretty nicely. So stuff that fault tolerant functionalities, which was already known by people and used a lot, and it applies here as well. So if the model cannot answer, you can fall back to another one, or you can fall back to some static response, whatever. And also I've heard that there was some work on guardrails, what you've mentioned. in Quarkus Langchain4j extension on inputs and outputs as well. I mean, for inputs, a lot of language models, language model providers, they already automatically do this kind of filtering, so it's less relevant. But still, like if you are using local models like Llama, it's pretty handy.
I mean, we also have something like this in MicroProf and Quarkus. It's called bin validation, right? So this is like the input validation, and we can have a validator which says, okay, but because at the end of the day, the parameter is a string or is a structure input. This is like OpenAPI parameters. And for every parameter, there is a bin validator. And we could even use another model to validate, you know, the validation. So it's not a problem. So this is, we could actually have, you know, a small model. And we teach the model, you know, to say, don't ask about the competitor or whatever. So something, because the guardrails, right, for the models, there's more, you know, this is more like, how to call it, politically correct input, right? On an enterprise, also, is this politically correct? Is maybe not wished by the company that you are asking for specific things, like, and this could be also implemented as a bin validation, which is already built into Quarkus.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Possibilities are endless.
Yeah, this is what, because I use, you know, MicroProf a lot, and if I see REC is for me just another application, that and the interesting part is, the model integration is very similar to microservice integration, actually. So you're calling something out, and you even using exactly the same tools, you have exactly the same problems. You can get throttled. It might not be available. So you have validation errors. You have to retry, and it can be slow. So and this is the fault tolerance, what we did for years. So if we are speaking about AI or LLM, I get all the ideas from the past we did with microservices and Quarkus, you know. This is completely LLM unrelated, but it's very, very similar, actually. And even the tools stuff is very similar. I mean, the only difference is usually in the past you got the open API from a microservice from a different department in a company. And now you create it for yourself and pass it to the model. So it is very similar to, like, if I'm a microservice provider, and I give someone my open API and someone calls me with the API. So this is what happens with LLM. So I would say this is very, very similar with complete strange names. Like, no one will call it tools. No, this is tools is the strangest term ever. So it's like, what is tools? And this is very simple. But why they call it tools? I mean, this is, right? This is a very strange term for this, what happens behind the scenes. Plugin would be good. Extension would be perfect, actually. Inversion of control, even better. But tools, why it is a tool? Maybe tool for LLM to gain the information. Yeah, information tool, maybe. Something like this, right?
Yeah, actually, I think it was called plugins before.
Ah, okay.
And also functions. So there are a lot of names there. Yeah, the naming can be much better, for sure. Okay, one more area which we've been working on recently is observability. So to be able to understand better what is happening under the hood, who is calling who, what is provided. So now many language models have listeners, which you can subscribe to events like request to the model, response from the model, stuff like that, errors. And yeah, you can then export it to whatever observability solution you use.
Hey, this is even better. So this observability is one thing, but if you do this, what you created then is change data capture. What CDC is in a database is usually, if you work with a database, And there is an Debezium, for instance, from Kafka, where we could install on various databases. If you did this, every insert, update, or whatever to a database created an event, and you can subscribe to the event and do something with it. With this, this is the same. So you could actually have to all the models to all you could emit an event. You know, this is the prompt and this is the result. So request and result. You can create an event and store it, let's say Kafka, because the most famous one. And then you have, you know, the entire audits. You see, you know, this was the observability is more like, you know, performance and stability. And I'm talking about actually exactly the same data used differently in audits. So I have my Kafka stream with all the events. I can subscribe to this and do something with the information. I can, for instance, call a complete different model with the data, and you know, validate the results whether it was correct, or can actually validate the other models. So it's like CDC for AI.
Yeah, can be so this way as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can do whatever you want with it, right? You can log it, you can store it, or process in whatever way. It's just because previously the only way to see what's happening was to just enable logs, which is not very flexible. And now you can put these listeners to the models. Mm-hmm. And we are working on adding the same for the AI services, for the whole RAG and tools pipeline. So to also have events there, like tool has been called with these parameters, with this output. RAG has been called, and this information has been retrieved, and stuff like that. So, yeah. And right now it's just in a form of listeners, which you can basically implement whatever you want there, but we are also working on adding out of the box integration with OpenTelemetry, micro profile, and stuff like that. So yeah,
it's also doable with out of the box Quarkus features like interceptors, right? Because whatever you do are interfaces, you can intercept the entire thing, and you know the parameters, and you also know the results. So this. Yeah, but if you add a nicer API, this is the point. So it comes out of the box, and
So working more on enabling this more enterprise features, which needed like observability and
but
like
the listener, you can store it to a micrometer or a micro profile metrics. But what you can also do with no effort is you can publish it as CDI event. So Quarkus already supports CDI events. It means you only have to inject the event, and then fire the changes, and then the application can subscribe to it, and send it to Kafka, whatever. No, so you could make the information available in the application, and you can write your own small extension or plugin, and write all the data to database or Kafka or whatever. So this is called CDI events, and Quarkus already supports it out of the box without any external dependencies. It is a part of the Arc plugin in Quarkus. Mm-hmm. So you can just, fire the events at any time.
I think in Quarkus world, there are for sure a lot of options, and I'm sure...
It fits. This is the thing, you know? If you look at LangChain and Quarkus, this is, I hate to say it, but synergy is all over the place. So, you know, this is the perfect case for Quarkus AI integration.
I mean, there has been a lot of other features, more smaller features, but nothing groundbreaking. I mean, a lot of work has been done, you know, to make it more configurable, more flexible, more reliable. Lots of bug fixes, documentation, examples. Because now we are getting to the point where we want this library to become more mature and more reliable. So there's been a lot of effort in that direction. Configurability, also interesting thing. So now, for example, you can dynamically change. In the context of AI services, right, where you have this nice interface where you annotate it with system message, user message, whatever, tools, everything is done declaratively and happens under the hood of this AI service. Now it's much more flexible. So you can, for example, dynamically select which system message is sent to the model, so which instructions it will get, which tools will be available to the model in this particular call, and it and this enables more interesting use cases like state machines, where you have different states. For example, a chatbot, it can have different states of conversation, like first state is greeting, you don't know anything about the user you are talking with. Then the next state is user is authenticated, so he provided his, I don't know, name, surname, whatever. So you collected some information from him. and so on and so forth. And then you can restrict the model what it can do at any given point of time. So if you're at the state of greeting, let's say you don't provide tools to LLM at all, mm-hmm. like it cannot do any action, trigger any action that it cannot yet. And then once the user gave his name and we checked that this user actually exists in the system, then you can transition to the next step. And you can provide different instructions to the model how it should behave, mm-hmm. and different tools. Like now you have access to this and that. And that you can, I don't know, cancel his reservations. You can do some other actions.
Mm-hmm.
So even, now,
yeah,
even cooler. So you could have for greetings a very small model with small window, but very cheap one and fast one. And you know, if you have all the information in place, you can you know pass all the conversational memory to the larger model, which is slower. But this is also natural to the user. So, you know, to gather all the information, you can work with a smaller, very responsive model. And if you have all the information in place, you can pass all the information to the larger model, which is more capable and more expensive.
Yeah, pretty sure this. Yeah, sounds like a good idea. And usually we also advise to not put everything into one big, you know, it's like a God object anti-pattern. So if you have a lot of stuff, a lot of instructions, a lot of tools in one place, it's most probably not the best idea to do that because then the model is lost, overloaded with information.
And debuggability, what you said also.
Yeah. So if you decompose it into smaller pieces, more manageable, it's easier to test, it's easier to, and it's also cheaper as you mentioned. So the smaller models, they can handle simple tasks, and it can be even local model, which is basically free. Stuff like
what
that.
Happened to me actually, so I worked with Claude, and Claude has large context window, but what happened to me, if the prompt was too complex, I got throttled. And I didn't know why. So I was forced to split the large prompt to multiple prompts. And then I performed them in parallel and merged the results on my side. And this worked. And the cool story is if something was throttled, you know, there's only the step three got throttled. So I can actually repeat the step three and merge part on my side. So if you have a large model, right now you're always in trouble. The problem still, all the cloud providers, they don't have the capacity to run consistently your models in one region. So usually, you know, you will have to do something about that and be more creative. It's actually what I said. It's like an unstable microservice. It's exactly the same approach. And what is also on the horizon, if you get, you know, a capable AI application, costs will be also a driving factor. And if you call it a lot of times, and, you know, what you said with the chat, and there are users which you like just, you know, have the nice conversation with the chatbot, you will pay a lot, you know, for no reason. So this will be interesting to, you know, like information gather as models. And then is the capable model which does, you know, the heavy work, and then the output can be also formatted with another model. And this is easily doable by the configurability you said. And which reminds me of qualifiers in CDI, you know, you have qualifiers and inject different parts depending on the context, also part of the microprofile. And by the way, I think you mentioned state machines. I think in one point of time, you will work with Cogito guys from Quarkus or Red Hat, because they also have like a state machine-like, you know, expert system stuff, which would be really interesting to combine with your work. It's called Cogito. And it is like there's like a planning system for traveling, you know, traveling salesman problem. It is also part of AI, but this is open source and part of Quarkus Red Hat. It also have extensions, and you could combine both systems, you know, and then it is really powerful.
Yeah, there is a lot of ideas and not as much time.
Lots of ideas and a singleton Dimitro. Yeah. What makes you the most exciting? So what you are excited? So about Java, LLM. So what do you like to do? So you have infinite time, money, and the largest team ever. What do you like to build?
I would definitely like to spend more time on building more products. With this stuff, And I mean, right now, what excites me the most is this making very nice and smooth APIs, which integrate very nicely into the Java mm-hmm. ecosystem. Stuff like tools, structured mm-hmm. outputs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very elegant, I would say, that as a user, you don't really have to worry about all this stuff like creating schemas, parsing, mm-hmm. instructing the model. Which is define you work with regular Java types, and it's all type safe
mm-hmm.
and validated. So this is really, I mean, this is nothing magical on the LangChain for J side. It's mostly done by LLMs, but all the glue code which we create to make it much easier the experience of for users.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really nice.
Cool. What excites me a bit is, you know, the direct integration between Java LLMs. We had a chat about Onyx and Vector API, you know, to mm-hmm. see Java calling directly the model without any HTTP calls or whatever. So this is what happens in this space. And what I'm curious about is how far or whether the industry will move towards CPU inference. So this is what interests me, because GPUs are expensive, power hungry, and I think we had a brief chat about that last time. I don't think it's necessary to have a god model for, you know, user greeting. So we could have a perfectly capable small models which run inference on CPU on normal machines. And maybe instead of have one large model, we get a multiple smaller, more focused models which run fast without any external dependencies. So this would be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it seems like, yeah, the industry is moving to this direction. A lot more smaller models are available, mm-hmm. quantization. So, yeah, a lot of work is done in that regard. So hopefully... And you can already do that. I mean, with CPU, you can easily run embedding models, smaller embedding models on CPU
mm-hmm.
Without problem. Even models like Llama.
Yeah.
So I have a pretty weak CPU, but still it works surprisingly fast with JLlama.
I think my machine was 10 tokens per second, as I remember. I think it was...
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't have GPUs, just CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And still, I mean, it's impressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it could happen. I don't know whether you remember. Yeah, I mentioned already Sun Microsystems, but what happened back then, Sun created the large servers, and they were the leader, you know, in the internet. Everyone wanted to have, you know, the Sun 18K on servers and what's not. And they were, but they were expensive. And what happened, Intel came out with small machines, and everything, okay, but this is not serious. You cannot run, you know, you cannot run serious stuff on the Intel stuff. And then cloud came. And suddenly we had one CPU machines with a little bit of RAM, and you could run everything, but not, you know, the entire website on this thing. And this was the idea that you write pieces of your entire system on such a thing, right? And Kubernetes happened, and suddenly large systems are running on actually toy CPUs if you compare them, you know, with back then. And there was the analogy, you know, pet versus cattle, where back then, you know, you had that one server and everyone cared about the server was never down. And now everything can be down at any time and the application has to live with it, right? So I think the same will happen with model, because the entire GPU industry and all the NVIDIA cards are crazy expensive and everyone waits, you know, for a cheaper solution. So I think the CPU inference, it has to have a future, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully.
Or ASICs or whatever, no?
ASICs as well, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, it was really nice to chat with you. Maybe we meet at DevOx. Will you attend DevOx?
Yep.
So then I will record a short for my YouTube channel for the viewers, so they will see you the first time. 1 minute with Dmytro. So Dmytro in suit, you know, with tie and smoking. So we will see live.
Of course.
So where people can find you right now and LangChain and all your work? So... What point is to the internet?
It's all on GitHub, so you can search for LangChain4j on GitHub, and all the contact information is there in my profile.
Oh.
And also on Twitter, X, LangChain4j handle.
Lang-Gen4j. I will put the information also to the show notes. And yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, same for me. Thank you so much.